everybody. I'm Ian Barrett.
And I'm Erin Hayes.
And welcome to Business Beat on WICN. Erin, who do we have on the show?
Today we're going to be speaking with Christopher Simpson, CEO of Sail to Trail Wineworks in Worcester.
Now, this is going to be a good show, and I don't even drink wine, so let's get to it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Business Beat. I'm your host, Ian Barrett, along with your other host, Erin Hayes from Media Boss, and Hello. David Ginsberg is here from WICN. David, Hello. Who did you bring with you today?
Very excited to welcome Christopher Simpson from, as you can see, Sail to Trail Wineworks.
Thank you for
Thanks
wearing the
for
shirt.
Being here. So
if I look down at your chest, Wine Evolved, Sail to Trail Wineworks established 2018.
So you're a new business.
What?
Very new. Yeah, I used 2018 just because that was when I formed the company. So
okay.
I figured it was as good as any.
Well, people who formed their companies in like 1818 did the same thing.
Right.
They're just 200 years old.
Right, right. So yeah, Charles Louis Tiffany back in 1837, I think, probably did the exact same
thing. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, that's a good year.
Well,
why not?
It's a good process to repeat.
Well, so that's a bit of an obstacle for you, though, because, you know, when you're talking about established wineries and, you know, the business, I mean, people have been around forever. What business does a newcomer have coming, making wine? We already did this all. Why are you here?
Right. Because I thought we could do it differently. I wanted to be able to bring great wines to my customers. I wanted to bring great wines to Worcester. Not that they aren't here, but not that are any that are locally branded. And I wanted to be able to bring really great wines to the city. You know, we have breweries all over the place, and they continue to pop up, and they're all doing very, very well. And I just thought it was time to kind of give Worcester some wine love.
So, Erin, you made a good point as you were on the website.
Yes, I did notice that you don't do the fancy sum talk.
No, we try to stay away from that as much as we possibly can. If people want to engage in, you know, really high-level malolactic fermentation talk, I'm not their guy. I do have a sommelier that is perfectly happy to have that conversation if you really want to. But no, I think our brand is really what you see here. It's jeans, it's sneakers, it's a T-shirt. It's come in to the tasting room, hang out, have a great bottle of wine, talk to me, talk to any of my associates, and just enjoy yourselves. It's supposed to be casual.
Well, I think it's interesting because you're basically where craft beer was 20 years ago, going into a place. I watched liquor stores go from, I mean, that was the profit margin for them. That's why it was all wine and liquor. And so you'd have extensive wine racks in these places. And as I've seen them now, there's coolers, fridges against all three walls now. And those are stacked, and the wine selection has actually gotten smaller over time. So now you're reintroducing it back. What lessons has the wine industry learned or not learned over this transition to craft beer?
So based on what I've seen in my marketing research, which I did a lot of before I started the endeavor, the wine industry, and there are exceptions obviously, but the wine industry largely has stayed behind the times in terms of data analytics, web analytics, understanding where their customers are coming from, understanding what type of advertising on social media is resulting in not just clicks, but, you know, low bounce rates and conversions and everything that maybe is taken for granted by companies in more modern industries. The wine industry is still very cursive writing, a sketch of a chateau on the label of their bottle. And
iconic.
Right. I looked at, as I was doing my research, one of the things I was researching is how can we do it differently from a marketing perspective? How can we brand ourselves to be a little bit different? And how can we understand where our customers are coming from? For example, we were talking for the segment, we were talking about how I was at two festivals down in Fairfield County. The reason I signed up for those festivals was because I was taking a look at my web data, and my web data was telling me that I was getting a lot of visits from the greater New York City and the Connecticut areas.
Right.
So without that information, I never would have started searching for Connecticut and New York City wine festivals.
Right.
And was really glad I did. I went down there and got great exposure down there and said, if there's a customer base down here that's interested in what it is that I'm providing, I want to get that exposure.
So you're exhibiting like one of the most amazing aspects of any company is to be nimble and to be able to react quickly. And that's what most companies aren't able to do. They don't see the data, they don't react, and they don't respond. And so, you know, it's a machine that keeps plowing through and they're able to make money in some quarters, but they're not innovating. And this is exactly, you started your business by doing that. In fact, your next wine should be called Low Bounce Rate.
I'm always stealing great ideas from other people. I have no issue with that whatsoever.
Maybe well, you're going to appeal to an entire. Well, I know a little right, bit about marketing. Right, I'll tell you something right now. There's not a geek out there that's not going to buy that wine.
Low just bounce rate. I love that. Guaranteed
just as long to as
we
like
name
it.
One 404 error, which should be fine.
Right. Like blue screen of death, right? Although that may be actually kind of funny, but.
That's great. So you said you started that way. So, I mean, you're basically taking the hard work, you're focused, you've got a laser focus on getting out there. And actually, a weekend like that can transform your company.
No doubt. You know, when we were down in Greenwich, we understood the clientele that we were going to be dealing with. We are not a fancy wine brand. We're a casual wine brand, even though our wines are outstanding. But we understood the clientele that we were going to be encountering down there, and there was no way to say no to putting the brand in front of billionaires.
Right. You don't say no to that.
You don't say no to the opportunity. The festival was great, but some of the VIP tickets were going for $12,000.
Right. Wow.
So the opportunity to be able to put our brand in front of that demographic was something that we just couldn't pass up. So.
So speaking of demographic, I mean, you talked about the tired chateau, but then there's also this like the skinny girl and the mom thing, which I think is equally as tired as the chateau. Mm-hmm. Where is your demographic in that? I mean, I feel like there's a huge underserved population as well, but I want you to tell me who that is.
Sure. So as millennials are sort of coming of age with their alcoholic beverage choices, I think right now they're a little on the agnostic side.
Mm-hmm. White Claw. Sorry.
Right.
I had to
right,
be said.
Seltzers and they're pushing a lot of the craft beer growth that's happening right now. And to be honest, a lot of them have demonstrated that they're not going to be drinking alcoholic beverages as much. Now, the data is beginning to indicate that they are starting to have more alcohol as part of their daily regimen because they're having kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think that that's a coincidence. Our marketing initially is not really directed towards millennials. What we're really looking at is we're trying to create a brand that speaks to Gen Xers, of which I'm one. Mm-hmm. Gen Xers right now are at the peak of their spending ability on this type of a product. They are looking for something experiential. They're looking for simplicity. They're really not looking for
pretension
or complexity in their wine choices. They're really looking to enjoy a nice glass of wine. So our marketing efforts in, who we're really looking at as our, kind of the ideal sale to trail client is someone that's in their early to mid 40s to their mid 50s, enjoys a really good glass of wine. But we also wanted to position ourselves so that as millennials do come of age, that we become a natural choice for them in terms of their wine choices as they get older. And part of that is, social media, it's messaging, it's community involvement, which is important to us.
So tell me a little bit about your wines. What makes them different, tasting-wise?
How do I say this gently?
They're not different.
No, they are. They are regionally. It's difficult in the Northeast to bottle a great Cab. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to bottle a great Zin. Up here, Long Island, some of the coastal areas are starting to have some nice whites, but you're going to be hard-pressed to find a quality Zinfandel from Worcester County. So what we do is we've spent the last year plus developing relationships through a network of sommeliers that I've also developed. One here, I have a very good relationship with one down in Texas who also acts as a broker for me. Mm-hmm. And we started developing the relationships with vineyards out on the West Coast to be able to say, okay, this is our flavor profile. Since we're starting, we wanted to start with a basic portfolio. So we wanted a Cab, we wanted a Zin, Sauvignon Blanc. We weren't going to be getting into lesser known varietals. Everybody says, you need this, you need that. Right. Let's start with the basics. Let's start with a red, Cab, a white, Chard. And we sampled 100 different samples of juice from various vineyards out on the West Coast and narrowed it down to 5 that we wanted to bottle.
Wow.
So what we do is, we take a look and we say, that fits our flavor profile. That's a really great wine. We want to purchase that from you. And then we take care of all the bottling operations with subcontractors. Right. Out on the West Coast. So not only is it good, but what kind of value is it so that we can bring that to our consumers and bottle it, label it, and have it shipped here.
I think you made an interesting point earlier, and I think I wanted to follow up by saying that I think that the wine industry kind of did itself in, because there's two kinds of wine. There's the investment bottle, and it's got to sit there, where you buy it and you don't want to drink it, and then you have your gallon jug of, you know, E&J, or, you know, and that you pour and spill all over the white tablecloth at the family dinner. You're creating a wine that you want people to consume, and this is, you know, when they get it. And this is actually a great tip to the craft beer industry, because the optimum consumption time is 90 days with a craft beer, because they're not pasteurized. And so what they got right is you got to drink it right away when you buy it. You don't put this away in the closet, you drink it. Mm-hmm. And that means that you got a return customer every 30 days, 60 days, every 9 days on your product. That's where I see the innovation here.
No question. Some of the wines that we tried from the vineyards, some of them were too young. And we said, you know what, this still needs another year in the cask, or, you know, it needs to age some more. And A, didn't have that kind of time in my schedule. And B, you know, as I said to somebody in New Canaan last weekend, somebody said, are these ready to drink right now? And I said, my wines are drinking wines. So uncork it and it's ready to go. Certainly, if you choose to let it age, I have my Zinfandel is from 2015, my Reserve Cab is from 2015. Certainly, if you cellar it, it's just going to become more mild and maybe a little bit more balanced, although I think my Reserve Cab is about as balanced as it can get now.
Right.
But no, certainly, you know, even if it's a 2018 Sauvignon Blanc, you know, all of the wines that I carry in my portfolio, they're ready to go.
Here's what you need to do. You need to put RFIDs on your bottles and then attach it to an app. And so when that 2015 is right, you can text them and say, or give them through the app, drink me now.
Drink me now.
I am downstairs. I'm not going to get better.
Right.
This is the best day for me.
I will not be ignored.
right, exactly.
Put the cap away. Right. And drink this in. I told
well,
you.
The best day is when they feel like transacting for
right.
me, you know. So today
is
the best day for you to drink this wine and then get some more tomorrow. So
that's fantastic. Speaking of wine and being a newcomer, I'm old enough to remember when Australian wines were the biggest joke, Chilean wines were the biggest joke, Spanish wines were the biggest joke, and now who's laughing now?
Right.
Not Australia.
Right.
They created an industry where they said, you cannot plant grapes down here. You cannot do this. So actually, I love the innovation. I've already seen lots of people defy expectations.
So we're just going to take a moment to get into some of the detail about the studio that we're in, Studio 50 at WICN. This is what you can find for content on the website. So I'm just going to read this out to you and talk a little bit about why it's so important. Studio 50 is located at WICN Public Radio at 50 Portland Street in Worcester, in the heart of the artistically emerging Grid and Theater District, and is now open for business. Full digital recording studio with Avid C24 mixing board and Pro Tools, 24-hour access, acoustic grand piano, and state-of-the-art acoustically engineered live room that can be used for performance or recording. This exciting location resides inside WICN Public Radio, taking you from conception to broadcast possibilities. Producers, engineers, coaches are all on staff. Recording training is available. Take your next project to Studio 50 and be inspired. That's where we're at, and that's what's so great about this particular room. Everybody has a podcast. You can have a podcast, and you can come here, and you can get done it professionally, as opposed to going to one of the other studios where you pay for a fee, you record in a room, and they make you take it home and edit it. They'll actually come here and put an engineer in the room with you and help you get everything set up. So it makes it so much simpler and really retains the quality control that you want on a podcast. So if you're thinking about podcasting, or you're thinking about creating content, or you're thinking about recording music, give them a call here at WICN and let them know. All right, well, now back to our interview.
Where are you going to grow? How are you going to grow? What are you going to do?
So one of the beautiful parts of my business model is that I can go anywhere in the country. I can go internationally. I'll get to that in a moment. But I can go anywhere in the country to be able to procure my product. So, for example, some of the best Cab Franc in the world right now is coming out of Idaho. Who knew? If you talk to industry insiders, they go, oh, yeah, Idaho Cab Franc is phenomenal. And climate change has, you know.
Oh, my God. I never even thought of that.
Yeah. Right? So those growing regions now are shifting, moving inland, and there's a lot of change. It's part of why some of the white varietals that you can get that are in the Northeast, maybe you had to go as far as Virginia to be able to grow those varietals at some point in time. But with climate change, that line is moving north. It's moving in from the coast. And the way we describe it is that lets us be appellation agnostic. So if there's a great cab that's coming out of Walla Walla, Washington or Sonoma, great, let's try them.
So you become a flavor broker, and like, you know, you can see it's like an index now. I'm seeing a matrix of like, oh, this is rising in popularity. It makes business sense to make the investment where the interest is.
Absolutely.
Where you can't do that in California when you've got 1 billion tons of one particular grape, mm-hmm. that's what you're making.
Yeah.
And you're doing that for the next 5 years. You've got, once again, that latitude to adjust.
You have a fire in Sonoma, it's awful. But if your vineyard is ravaged by smoke taint or something like that, that's going to affect, you know, not just this vintage, if you even have one, but maybe vintages for a couple of years, right?
Because of what it does to the soil?
Because of what it does, sure.
Yeah.
Whereas I can say, I don't mean this to sound callous, but I can say,
okay, moving on.
I'm moving on, yeah. You know? I mean, because I have my own, you know, I have my own business model that I need to take care of and fulfill my
You can also take advantage of smaller growers, do smaller batches, because you're not trying to do the volume that other people are doing.
Correct. So after we had tried, you know, 100 different juices from various vineyards, you start to recognize the vineyards that, even if their cab wasn't the best cab that we'd tried, or their Zin wasn't the best Zin that we'd tried, then we would say, you know what though, they were always right there. So then those become the people that you really develop those relationships with, right. And you give them a call and you say, hey, I'm looking, what do you guys have for a Petite Syrah? Or what do you guys have for, do you guys have a Zin, you know, this year? And you start to realize the people, because everybody wants to tell you, I'm offering an ultra premium product. And then you get it and you say, that's not even close.
Right.
But you do have the growers that repeatedly provide you with good product. And you say those are the people that you want to develop the relationships with long term. So yeah, we can be flexible. You know, we have the relationships with the vineyards that have treated us well, and we'll continue to grow that and continue to look elsewhere for any other opportunities that there are, whether it's Texas or Idaho or Virginia, wherever.
I have a virtual sales opportunity with David and Aaron that I'd like to experiment with. Could you please treat them as consumers and sell them each a bottle of wine with a little interview process?
All right. So what kind of wine do you like? Are you a white person or a red person?
I am more of a white person.
Do you like Chardonnay?
I hate Chardonnay.
Why?
Because it tastes flat or not too sweet. I don't even know how to describe it. I just never have had a Chardonnay I like.
So my Chardonnay is unoaked.
Right.
So it's completely been stored in stainless steel, and it has a very nice aroma and palate of pineapple.
Pineapple, so not the cream. I mean, like, it almost tastes creamy to me.
I think he's referring when he's talking about not oaking it.
It's not oaky, it's not buttery,
yeah.
It's light,
buttery.
It's refreshing, it's crisp with some citrus notes. People at the festivals that I've been to, that typically, they think of a Chardonnay and they think of buttery, oaky, rich wines.
Yeah.
Try my Chardonnay and fall in love with it because it's crisp. My sommelier up here calls it the ultimate porch pounder.
Okay, I will give it a try.
That's, I'm sold. I want that.
David, how about you? Are you a red guy or are you a?
I tend to be a red wine drinker in the wintertime and a white wine drinker in the summertime.
See, I don't get that. That's the reality of it. I'm a red wine guy.
Yeah,
all
Dave.
The time.
Whatever. I don't get that.
I just, you know, the seasonality of it is just. I was thinking about that today. I was thinking.
I can explain it though. In the wintertime,
sure.
I want a heavier wine that's going to warm me up and it sort of fits the season. The summertime. A lot of times if I'm going out to eat, I'm sitting outside. I like having a Sauvignon Blanc or a Chenin Blanc. I like those a lot as well, where I can sit back and really, it's very light and I, you know, it has that refreshing sense to it. And some reason I can't drink red wine in hot weather.
I have a year-round red wine for you.
Okay.
It's my Zinfandel, which is my personal favorite in the portfolio.
Okay.
The first time I smelled it, it's very light in terms of a red.
Okay.
So in the summertime, it's not going to be overpowering like, you know, a really rich chocolatey cab, which would be, you know, kind of my signature cab would fall into that category. But the Zin is very, very fruit forward. And when I open up a bottle, I almost don't even want to drink it because the aroma is so resplendent with raspberries.
Okay.
It's wonderful. And it's a very, very light red. I think you would be surprised and find that the Zin.
I'm happy to test your theory anytime.
Well, you know.
Surprise me, Chris.
But see, that's great, too. Now you could buy a case and say, I don't have to worry about that. I'm going to drink it all now
that's
or
right.
Whatever, right? I can pace this out over the
Thank
course
God,
of the
Thank God, because that's a serious problem to have. You don't want to just have to drink an entire case of wine.
Well, in a day, yeah.
In a day, yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, the season's changing.
Yeah,
I got to go through this.
Yeah, I got to blast through this.
The holidays are staring. staring right? us in the face.
Yeah. I got to get through this. I got to get through this wine.
To get through this taping.
I didn't even think to bring any. That's a shame on me.
Listen, no, well, it's okay. We've had the precedent established. We had ice cream and infections in here, and we had no samples for that either. I was left like completely voracious, and I had to go out, and I think I went and hit Coney Island, and just because I was so starving. Now I'm very
thirsty. We're going straight to the winery after this.
Well, and I was going to say, next time, if you guys just want to take the setup and bring it up to the tasting room, people love afternoon meetings in my tasting room because typically bottles of wine do get cracked open.
We are our first special. Yeah. We'll do it at your place, and we'll have our guests there, and we'll do a round table.
That'd be great. That would be fantastic.
And perhaps we could bring a little jazz combo up there to play for WICN and make
man. That just happened.
An event just happened.
Boom.
Our listeners heard it happen.
Tickets on sale now.
Tickets on sale now. Oh, my God. It just keeps getting better. This is what happens when you're around marketing people. this is like the
ideas just are coming, right?
Listen, you got an app, you got a bottle of wine name, and now we have an event. Yeah. We just did, boom.
Where does the name come from, by the way? I'm just curious.
So I'm a born and raised Worcester guy, which is, you know, why I wanted to bring it to the city, right? You know, this city, for people that live here, I think the accolades that the city is getting now, from my perspective, are 20 years too late. I think that this has been a great city to live in for a long time. But having been raised here, you know, my parents always told me how lucky we were to, you know, geographically, because you can be at the beach and you can be on top of Mount Monadnock all on the same day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the name of the wine is intended to speak to the, you know, not unique, but the special geography of New England, with that combination being fairly special here in the United States. So
yeah, it makes sense. And you know, I love, as a Worcester native myself, I love, aside from the fact that the city is undergoing this incredible renaissance and getting attention for it, that we have a wine tasting room, that a local native has brought this together, and the casualness, because I think we've become a much more casual society, and the wine still has this sort of stuffy image to it.
Sure.
And it's very formal. You know, we had that moment when the waiter rings the wine list at a restaurant, and you're like, oh, what am I going to do? And taking all of that sort of pretentiousness out of it and just saying, hey, it's a great wine. It's laid back. Come in and sip it. I love that.
Well, I like the explanation he gave you. I think that's what anybody wants when they're going to consume something, especially when they don't know. I think behind the label and the green glass, what does that taste like? Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to enjoy this? And when you fight for every dollar, you know, when am I going to put 50 into something that I don't like and be super mad?
But we also grew up in, you know, I'll use Starbucks as an example of this. So before Starbucks 25 years ago would ever rolled out across the country, you would hear about Starbucks and it was this sort of whisper in this reverential tone. In the end, it's coffee. It's not, they're not doing anything all that special. It's coffee. You're just paying more for it. It's still coffee. You know, wine has been built up to be this, you know, everything's present, this presentation, the label we talked about earlier, and so fancy, and they unbox it, and, you know, oh, would you like to sip the, you smell the glass, and do it. Just pour me a glass of wine, let me relax.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Let's get to it.
You know, people are going to be able to come in. The tasting room, I have everything that I need to be able to do tastings in there right now. And by tastings, I don't necessarily mean formal events where I need to send out invitations. People can just walk in and try the wine. Right now, I'm in the process of getting my inventory in from fulfillment in the Midwest, which is where direct-to-consumer and e-commerce shipments go from. But once that lands, I'm going to be the first customer for my distributor, and I'm going to be ready to go. People can come in anytime they want.
Tell people where they need to go to do so.
So we're in the Higgins Armory building. No, we're not taking over the entire building. I've had people say, like, the whole building?
Did they leave any like suits of armor for you or anything like that?
A little bit, actually.
Nice.
In the lobby, there are four corners where they have some helmets that are in there in the lobby.
Oh, that's one of my favorite places of Worcester. So that's really nice. There's a little heritage that goes into this. That's excellent.
No doubt. And one of the things that was part of the calculus of going into that building is they have the great event space upstairs. Yeah. And when I reach out and have conversations with charities about charitable involvement, one of the things I've always thought of would be, you know, it'd be great to do some sort of a gala event in that building. Personally, I was thinking something surrounding the Kentucky Derby, because it gives people a great opportunity, you know, to spend the afternoon getting dressed up and have a great time. There's nothing else going on.
I say, do an adult wine prom.
An adult wine prom.
Boom! We gotta stop. I
like
great.
That.
Yeah.
Can it be like an 80s throwback wine prom?
Yeah,
I mean, it would really.
My mullet's not coming back, but the rest of it, by all means.
The parachute pants, try squeezing into those things, you know. But yeah, so Higgins Armory building, I'm up on the second floor. My tasting room is small. It's really what I wanted it to be. With any luck, I'll grow. Right. But, you know, from small beginnings.
So, right now you're servicing retailers, or are you direct, or how do people purchase?
So I am direct to consumer over my website to 44 states, including Massachusetts.
And then thank God for all the laws that changed that allow you to do that, right?
Yes, yes. Actually, I have to say, out of everything that I've gone through with permitting for the state, my direct to consumer shipping license here in Massachusetts was very, very easy. Good. They seem to have, when they put the statute in place for that, they seem to have realized the last thing that we need to do here is put in multiple layers of regulation and bureaucracy. Yeah. And, you know, so it seems like they intentionally made that a fairly simple, fairly quick process. So
do you need to charge sales tax on things that you ship out of state? Because I see that Massachusetts is cracking down on that now.
No, not on direct-to-consumer shipments for wine. Any of the wine that I bring into the state, though, there's an excise tax associated with it.
And can we buy wine at the tasting room?
As of next week, you will be able to.
Oh, yes. Great. So by the time this airs.
Yes. Oh, the timing is perfect.
So by the time you're listening to this, you need to go head down to the armory. And get yourself up to the
your
second
first
floor.
This will be on a Sunday night, so Monday morning we want you get in the car.
So yeah, it'll be later.
There'll be a line
it'll
outside.
Be later. Yeah. Wait for the announcement on the website. So
come on, we'll do a breakfast with wine and make a go of it.
One thing through this entire project has been my tendency to underestimate how long things take. So that wine is literally in transit right now to Massachusetts. So I figure a day or two to be able to get that into the tasting room, and then I should be able to sell out of the tasting room. So, and people can come in anytime they want, have samples of the entire portfolio, decide if they want to purchase or sign up for club or not.
Great. So if you're an event organizer, do you reach out to party planners and people like that to feature like events around your stuff? That should be one of your marketing.
So I actually have a meeting right after this for a private event that she would like to do. She'd like to do a tasting. I've had a lot of people reach out to me about private events in my space, which I won't be able to do that just yet. I still need to go through the pouring permit process here with the city of Worcester, they've been phenomenal through the entire process. Once that's in place, then I can pour wines by the glass and I can do private tasting events and stuff.
But imagine, and as the only single guy in the room, that's right, ladies, the wine tasting is a great first date event. Great.
Whoa.
Go to the tasting room, bring your date, casual, relaxed atmosphere, get to know each other with a glass of wine or two. I'm just helping you out.
Absolutely. And if anybody's thinking about proposing, I think it would be a great place for that as well. Absolutely.
And then when you have your wedding, you can buy all your wine from the place that you had your first
right, wine. Exactly.
You could have the wedding.
This is
there.
Like amazing. He locks them in.
Right?
He gets them on the first date, and he gets them on the wedding on the back end.
That's right.
When the baby's born, you know he's going to get another 20 gallons out of you. Because we know
That's right. Yeah, I've had people reaching out to me already. I had somebody call me a couple weeks ago, and she said, I heard you're booking weddings. And I'm like,
I am now.
Right, exactly. There's clearly a revenue stream here that I need to tap into.
So 25% on top of everything for a wedding.
Right, yeah. Right. So,
well, we've watched your business grow over the last half hour. We're so glad that you could join us on the show, and I'm looking forward to our first remote at the Higgins Armory show.
Anytime.
We're gonna schedule that momentarily.
Anytime. That'd be great.
Well, once again, thanks for coming on the show, and you can get all the information. Could you just share a website?
Sure. It's www.sailtotrail, sailtotrail.com, and we're live. We're shipping to Massachusetts right now. Sign up for club.
I'm going to punch that into my phone right now. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
For a non-wine drinker, I found that pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, apparently I'm going to be a huge Chardonnay fan now, so looking forward to that.
It's so neat, the technology involved in what he's doing, and the idea that something like this is happening in Worcester at the Armory. It's that renaissance. We keep saying that word all the time, but this is just a perfect example.
It absolutely is. I cannot wait to see his space in the Armory. It's got to be gorgeous.
So, cheers to Christopher.
Cheers to Christopher.
Cheers to Christopher. Thanks for being on the show, and cheers to you for listening, and we'll catch you all again next week on Business Beat on WICN.